Yo, what's up, guys? JB here. Today is Sunday, the 15th of April, 2012, and I'm joined on this podcast by the newest, the latest, and some even say the greatest Theory 11 artist, Mr. Andy Nyman. Andy is a co-creator, co-writer, and frequent collaborator of Darren Brown on his television series. He's also a successful actor, a director. Pretty much everything he does is brilliant and amazing, and I'm very pleased to have him on this podcast with us today. Andy, are you there? Can you hear me right now?
I am here in chilly London, and it's very, very nice to be talking to you and everyone else.
You sound like you're from London.
Yes, I am, Governor.
So this is a roundtable discussion podcast. For those of you who've listened to these before, you understand how it works. For those of you that don't, I'll explain it. Basically, we post an open call for questions in the Theory 11 forums. People can ask any question they want, whether it's a simple question, an elaborate question, and anything else in between. And we're going to get to as many of those questions from you guys, our members, on this podcast. We have a short amount of time. Andy had a performance earlier today, so we don't want to keep him up all night, but we're certainly going to try to get to as many questions as we possibly can. And Andy, if you're ready, I will start.
I'm not only ready, I'm ready and willing. Let's go.
I like that. I like that. So the first question I thought is a good start here is by a member whose name is Goat Ears, which I think obviously, I don't know what that means. Goat
Maybe
Ears.
It's actually Satan.
His post number is 4, and he says, how did you get started in magic and mentalism? So if we go back to the beginning, what are your roots in magic, and how did you steer that into more of the mentalism flavor you have now?
Okay, so I'll keep this as brief as possible. It's the classic, really. I grew up loving jokes and tricks and goofy stuff, practical jokes and stuff. When I was a boy, my uncle bought me a magic set, which I loved. But I loved looking at it and doing it. But it was, I think, Chad Valley, which was a toy company here. And like a lot of magic sets, the instructions were absolutely appalling. So I couldn't work anything out, but I loved looking at it and playing with it. So I didn't really do anything of skill. And I didn't actually properly get into magic until I was in my final year of drama school, which was 1987. It had always sort of stayed in the back of my mind. I'd learnt a few tricks and bits and bobs. And when I left drama school, my oldest buddy, Jeremy Dyson, who I wrote Ghost Stories with many years later, but he'd moved up to London. He's always been into magic, and he said, let's go to Davenport's magic shop. And I was 21, and I thought, you're crazy. I'm 21, why do I want to go to a magic shop for babies? I walked into the shop, and it was like they'd strapped me down and injected me with heroin. I mean, it was just instant bammo. I just was hooked, and that was it. You know, like everyone else, it's an expensive hobby, and I was spending more money than I had on it. I was an out-of-work actor, and after about a year and a half of just spending money, I thought, this is crazy, I've got to try and earn something back. So a guy that I had written a musical that I'd done, he'd thankfully given up writing because it was abysmal, the thing that I'd done, and he was now a party planner. So I said, do you ever use magicians? Yes, he said. Great. Do you want to see me do some magic? He said, no, I hate magic. I'll just book you. That's fine. I'll trust if you're telling me you can do it, you can do it. And so I got booked for a gig. I did a gig. And at that time, I was driving vans and lorries to earn money. And I earned in an hour what I was earning in a week driving lorries. I thought, okay, well, that's doesn't take more than that to understand I should be doing the magic, not the driving. Because that will leave me free time to be an actor, which is, you know, what I was aspiring to be. And still do, obviously. And that was it. I very quickly became very sort of in demand on the private party circuit. And after a long time, sort of 5 or 6 years of doing gigs, always as a sort of hobby within the magic, I suddenly thought, I'd always liked mentalism because it was very actor-based. And the thing that really got me, hooked me properly, was I stumbled across Al Baker's Book of Mental Magic. In fact, I think Jerry Sadowitz bought a copy for me, and there was his center tear in there that I just thought, oh my god, that's amazing. Getting the peak as you do the tear was just amazing, and that was it. I then really focused on the mentalism, but I still love it. I still adore close-up. I'm on the magic sites all the time. I buy loads of tricks. You know, I really believe that all the knowledge that you have helps. So that's how I got into it.
So this is interesting. So when you were a kid, being before you wandered into that magic shop when you said you were 21,
yeah,
your goal was always to be an actor, right?
That is still my goal. That is my career. I mean, I am, I shouldn't say that's my goal. That is what I do. My, you know, I'm known in England for acting, and no one even knows I do magic, really. You know, apart from the magic world, if anyone knows what I do, they might know that I write Derren Brown, or wrote Derren Brown up until, you know, the past couple of years. But other than that, no one knows me as a magician. They know me as an actor. I've always kept the worlds completely separate. So that's my job.
It's interesting, yeah. Completely separate, but it seems like as of recently, they've intersected in interesting ways with ghost stories, having some of a magic vibe, and obviously with Derren and
yeah.
Otherwise. Interesting. So that leads us to a good next question here by the Sunny G, post number 8. He's saying a similar question. How did you end up working with Derren Brown? How did that relationship start? Where did you meet him? And how did that begin?
This is going to sound like nonsense, but this is absolutely true. I was an out-of-work actor. I was on the verge of my first movie that I'd been auditioning for. It took a ridiculously long time. It was 3 years of auditions on this movie that was on and off and on and off. And I was in the West End in Soho, and my mobile phone went, and it was Andrew O'Connor of Objective Productions who phoned and said, "You don't know who I am, my name's Andrew O'Connor. I want to offer you a 1 hour special on Channel 4 doing your mentalism." You know, it's the sort of dream phone call. It literally is, you know, and for those who don't know, Channel 4 here is one of the four national channels. I mean, it doesn't get much cooler and bigger, you know. And I said, "That's very nice of you, but I have zero interest in doing that. I'm an actor, that's what I love, and so I'm not interested. Thank you." I think he thought I was insane and said, "Let's eat for lunch." So we went and had lunch with him and Michael Vine, who is the other co-owner of Objective Productions, who, if I do the impression, basically has exactly the same voice because they sound like each other. And we went for lunch, and they offered me a 1 hour special on Channel 4 and what was fundamentally a 5-year deal. They presumed they could make it last for 5 years. And I turned it down and said, "No, I'm not interested. I'm an actor. That's what I do. That's what I love. This wouldn't make me happy," which is all I care about ultimately, JB. That nothing else bothers me. Being happy is the driving force in my life. And that wouldn't make me happy. But whoever you find, I will happily give up all my ideas and write for and direct, and that'll be fine. I'll do that.
Was that a hard decision, or was that an impulse?
It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. I mean, it's just, it didn't even for a flicker of a second. And they offered me, you know, it was a considerable amount of money, but, you know, I knew my wife, you know, I am still married, and, you know, we were married then, and we had, how long ago is this? Yeah, we had two children. I was an out-of-work actor, and I knew that my wife would feel exactly the same way as I did. I wouldn't go home and she'd say, "You turned down what? You insane?" I knew I'd go home and she'd say, "Why would you want to be a magician? Don't make you happy, do they? You know, it's your hobby." So, no, and as hard as it may be for people to believe, not for one iota of a flicker of a second have I ever, not even regret. Regret is too strong a thought. It's never even occurred to me to think, do I regret that? I mean, it's just not even registered. So, no, it wasn't a hard decision at all. It didn't even feel like a decision. It just felt like, why would I want to stop acting? So then they asked a few more times, and I kept saying no. And then a couple of months later, they came and said, "We found this guy, Derren Brown. Have you ever seen him?" And I'd seen him at a convention, and he was extraordinary. And they said, "Well, we think he's going to be the man, but we want you to write material for him." And he's not a performer, really. I mean, he was performing in Bristol in sort of close-up gigs, but didn't have any sort of training. And they really wanted me to sort of direct his training and script him, and so we got together and we got on like a house on fire, and that was the beginning of 10 years.
It's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
There's a certain, you know, people out there, especially if they were an out-of-work actor, that you could have offered, you know, people could offer them, hey, do you want to do a violinist television special? And they'd be like, all right, I'm going to learn the violin because I have nothing else to do.
But you know what, though? I think that it's, God, I think I get a bit boring talking about this, but this to me is at the heart of absolutely everything, creatively and just life-wise. And to find what it is that makes you happy and to pursue that and nothing else is the answer to everything, I believe. And that's the same with, you know, inevitably when, you know, within what we're talking about primarily here, which is magic, for people, you know, that's why it never makes sense for people to just try and be Darren or try and be Blaine or try and be Chris Angel or try and be Dynamo, who's, you know, the guy's just being huge in England at the moment, because they are who they are, and you can only be a pale imitation. You need to find what it is about you that makes you sparky and alive and passionate, and that's what will entrance an audience. You know, you only find what makes you happy and chase that. Nothing, everything else is a false god. Money is a false god. Fame is a false god. They mean nothing. They do not lead to happiness. Be happy, and everything else will either follow, or at least you're happy in the pursuit of it. That's what I believe.
So for magic, has it always been something that intrigued you? Magic obviously makes you happy because you like doing it, but you always, you had, you know, very, a lot of clarity in between what you wanted to do, you know, full time as your profession and what you wanted to do as your hobby. And you had that clarity since the beginning.
Yes.
Wow. Absolutely. So speaking of that divide, there's a question here, Magical Slight, post number 17. How does or how has your career in theater affected your career in magic? How have they come together? How are they different?
Again, it sounds dull for me to keep saying it. I don't have a career in magic. Magic is my hobby. It's a wonderful hobby, and I include in that all the Darren Brown directing the shows. And, you know, that's honestly, that tunnel vision about this as what has managed to keep them as separate entities. Where they do cross over is in, was really, you know, when I was directing the Darren stage shows, was my sense of theatre for those, because I never ever wanted them to be magic shows. It was important to me that they were pieces of theatre, so the audience went on a journey when they saw the show. It wasn't just, you know, a magician doing 2 hours of tricks. And equally, when Jeremy Dyson and myself wrote and directed Ghost Stories, a lot of my magical knowledge was brought to bear in that. There wasn't magic in the show, there were a few effects. But what is remarkable is after a while, within magic, how you learn so many of those tricks are about the rhythm of stuff, you know. So, you know, the rhythm of making somebody jump or scream isn't that different from building the climax of a magic trick or building the climax of a joke, you know, the rhythm of a punchline. That they have a very similar showbiz vibe, you know. And so that knowledge, that sort of 20 years of magic performing and structuring really helped form what Ghost Stories was. There are also very pragmatic ways. There's quite a lot of time in some of the movies I've done where I've had to kind of take pills or do stuff where actually, rather than them saying, no, these things are absolutely fine, they're safe, seriously, they're fine, you sort of think, really? You know what? I'm just actually not going to put them in my mouth. And, you know, you use a fake transfer or something to just kind of... I've used so much stuff when I'm working like that. And there was one movie, there was a big TV thing that I did here called Dead Set, that if you should be able to get in the States now as well. It's terrific. It was a sort of mini-series. And there's one bit where I have to chop somebody up. I have to gut them. And I've done a lot of very extreme stuff. Anyway, and they'd really not thought through the sort of special effects side of it, in terms of they had one fake knife that was just made of plastic. I mean, it wasn't like a special hocus-pocus knife. It was just a plastic knife. So... Well, actually, I tell a lie, they had two knives. So I just, you know, quickly had a thing and spoke to the special effects guy and got them to cut one knife in half at an angle and the other knife leave full. And between that and sort of lifting up the big knife and then asking them where the shots were, switching that out for the short knife that's then in the stomach that you can cut, using my knowledge of spirit surgery, you know, where my hand was, then I could make it really look like I was dipping my hand in and hide the guts and pull them out.
Yes.
So, you know, that was a moment where all of that knowledge really kind of was brought to bear.
Another idea I thought here, there's a post number, Simon Art, post number 36. He's saying, do you feel that being an actor has helped you being better, more confident, and I guess more effective in your magic presentations? So when you do perform magic, if it's for fun or whether it was at private gigs, did that training as an actor, you know, come into play, and how did it?
Definitely. I mean, you know, just in the way that you relate to an audience. I'm always amazed when I go to the Magic Castle. I say that as an example of, I think it a lot when I see magicians, but particularly at the Magic Castle, because, you know, working in the close-up room there, where it is, you know, it's the perfect close-up space. You know, you can talk at a volume that we're talking to each other now in the way that you would communicate to people if you're just talking to them, and yet guys come out and they are talking like this and you think, what the hell, why are you talking like that? There's 20 of us and we're sitting, I can touch you, I'm so close. You know, I'm always amazed by the lack of understanding of how to treat an audience, how to engage an audience. So I think that stuff, yeah, that training really has helped in terms of performing. Yeah, undoubtedly.
There's a post here from Ethereal Trinity, post number 21. What other mustache styles have you tried before the current stash you're sporting now?
I have a very large handlebar mustache at the moment for this play that I'm doing at the moment. I do like fooling around with facial hair, it has to be said. So I haven't had that many mustaches. I've certainly had, and there's a movie called Black Death, and I had a big full beard for that. I'd like goatee beards. I shave them off, I shave it down. I like looking different. I don't know what it is, but there you go.
Here's a cool question that's by TD. His post number is 22. He's actually in London. He's not too far away. The post is kind of complicated, but I think I understand with the spirit of what he's getting. He wrote, the work you've done with Darren could be seen as transcending traditional magic as it blurs the line between psychology and trickery. Do you think there are other scientific disciplines which, if exploited as a framework for magic, would have the same air of realism as Mr. Brown's shows and character have?
Yes, is the answer to that. I think that, you know, we should constantly be looking. Look, the greatest lies are the ones that are closest to the truth. You know, because they're so hard to distinguish. That was something I, you know, with Darren that I talked about a lot, was that the lies all need to be plausible. And so if you can base stuff in science or base stuff in experiments that you've seen about or read about, or it just, there's a ring of truth to them. So yeah, I suspect there's lots of science stuff that's out there that you should be looking at and basing your lies on and presentations on. Yeah, why not?
I mean, I think that's the one thing that sets your work with Darren apart from David Blaine. It's what makes him different than David Copperfield. It's when you're seeing either of those other two performers, as amazing as each of them are, the audience isn't, you know, literally asking themselves, is this real? Is this even a trick? Is this psychological? Is this science?
But that is the joy of mentalism, really. That was the thing that really intrigued me so much, is that, you know, as brilliant as Copperfield's flying was, for instance, never do you truly believe we need to really rethink science here, because if this man can fly, everything's changed. Whereas with mentalism, there is, if you do it right, there is absolutely that question mark of what the hell. Now, the big problem is then replace, because there's also, Darren and I both had an agenda, which is, you know, we don't like the pseudo psychic world, we don't like psychics, we don't like any of that stuff. And yet, if you're not careful, what you end up doing is replacing one life for another. So, you know, that's another reason that I wasn't interested in being the person, because I didn't want to live a lie. That's not to say Darren is living a lie, but what I'm saying is that for me, I was uncomfortable really spending my life walking down the street with people going, hey, what am I thinking? Come on, what am I doing? You know, well, write it down, pop it in this wallet, and I'll tell you. You know, I don't, you know, I was never comfortable with that. But so we really found a way for Darren whereby there was enough truth in there that it was, you know, palatable.
Was that a long process of coming up with that, the right chemistry there, the right mixture of realism and how to actually make that come across well on television?
Yeah, it's like it's a learning curve and everything, you know. I mean, the other not to be underestimated voice in all of that was Andrew Oak, who was, you know, really a brilliant driving force in the first special. He was fantastic, you know. And we also had a tremendous team around us. Anthony Owen, who was also a contributor, who's, you know, a terrific magic producer, was also involved. But, you know, Andrew O'Connor really had a sense of what he wanted from the show. And he can be a very tough taskmaster, Andrew, which I really respond to. I like that very much. I like it being laid out for you in black and white because it gives you a challenge for you to rise to.
And before you go, there's a lot of questions here about what can people expect from Andy Nyman's debut effect at Theory 11. So what is Insane in a nutshell without telling them the exact effect?
Oh, don't worry. I'm not spilling any beans. Okay. So let me tell you, I'm really, really excited about this. It is... I love open predictions. And I love the idea of setting a premise up for an audience, and as you set that premise up, you gradually take away all the things that they think it can be. So what they're left with is, what the hell have I just seen? And that's really what I wanted to do with Insane, was create an effect that I don't, you know, if I'm honest, I always enter everything that I do thinking it's... This is probably the wrong thing to say, but I can't. It's like I've got Tourette's. I have to say what's in my head. I don't know how much of a magician fooler it is. I don't know, because I don't structure stuff to fool magicians. I structure stuff to fool people. And as a people trick, I know the reaction to it is insane. It's because it's as close as I could. I wanted to strip down an effect to make it as real as it could be. So that's what Insane is. It's, I hope that's enough of telling you sort of what it is without telling you anything, but I'm really excited about it. It was something that I was puzzling around for quite some time. And then we're also talking about, we're working on something else, aren't we, JB, at the moment? We may or may not be, which will happen later in the year, which is something else that I'm super excited about.
I think we can tell them Insane is a very simple effect. It is a very...
I should say that. I mean, I'm incapable of creating hard-to-do effects. I don't know what it is. Maybe because I look at the stuff on your site, the technical ability of those guys, and it makes me bleed from the eyes. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I wish that I could do that, you know. But I just... I love just... stripping it down. So you'll do this, you'll do it 10 minutes out of the DVD case. I mean, this is not a hard trick by any stretch of the imagination. Everything that I do is about the performance and the impact that gives. So you don't have to worry about the technical stuff. You know, there's one technical thing. And that, you know, and I say technical in the respect that it's nuts and bolts technical. It's not like a hard thing. And that one thing is so hidden within the structure of what you're doing that you're so far ahead, it's fine.
It's, I mean, I remember watching Insane, the first rough video that you had sent me. And as, you know, it's a prediction effect. We can tell them that. It does use playing cards, but it is not necessarily a card trick. It is a mentalism effect.
Yeah.
But I remember watching it, and then as I was watching it, I was like, oh, I know the method to this. And then you removed that method from my vocabulary because of something, the next move you did. And then I was like, oh, I got another method here. And this is like, you know, 30 seconds in. And then you canceled out that method by something else. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I see what he's doing. Because I've seen a lot of tricks, as you do as well.
Yeah.
And then the last little stroke of something you do, you know, he uses the spectator. The spectator's touching things. And every method I had was canceled out one by one, almost as if you were just messing with me over the course of the 2 minute effect here. And so I think, I hope people have that same experience when they see the studio for the first time.
I so hope people like it. I really do, because I like it and it really matters to me. You know, I love this stuff. So, you know.
It's a very devious, evil method that, you know, once people learn how it works, it's beautiful in its simplicity. But it works, and it's bulletproof and it's foolproof and it's fooled, you know, everyone on our team that we have showed this to originally. So we're very excited. So stay tuned over the next week, guys. Listening to this, we're going to be releasing the first teaser video, the preview video, and announcing the release date within the next 48 hours. So stay tuned to the forums and Theory 11 on Facebook and Twitter, and obviously follow Andy Nyman as well. He's just at Andy Nyman, NYMAN on Twitter. And
like New York man.
Yes, like New York man, but he's in London. we're excited. We're very excited to bring this to you. We've got a lot more in works from Andy Nyman over the next year, so stay tuned. And the first effect that he'll be releasing with Theory 11 is called Insane, and we're very excited about it. And Andy, thank you for answering all these questions.
JB, such a pleasure, and great to do this.
Thank you. And last but not least, thank you to all the members who submitted these questions. We had 150 something questions submitted over the course of less than 24 hours now. So thank you guys. Hopefully we got to at least the biggest questions that you guys submitted, and we will be doing another one of these roundtable discussion podcasts very soon. So stay tuned to the forums. Until then, have a great weekend. Thanks. Thank you, Andy.
Bye.